Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
Well, welcome to Sex Help with Carol the Coach. Hi, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, a CSAT, a certified sexual addictions therapist, who does this show every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I've got about 60 shows under my belt, which means that I've been doing it a little bit over a year and loving every bit of it, because it is my mission and my passion to enlighten you about what sexual addiction is, how do you get help, what if you love somebody who appears to be a sex addict, how do you know? So this is the show that disseminates information to you. And more often than not, I have experts in the field that I include in the show. Tonight, we're going to have Connie A. Lofgren. She's an MSW and a certified sexual addictions therapist, and she wrote The Storm of Sexual Addiction. And although many books talk about tools and hope, I believe that her book is really a classic in terms of what do you do to create recovery, what are the specific tools, the resources, and the formula to make that happen. And in the way she writes, you just get a real feeling of hope that that will occur. So I'm excited to have Connie on. She's going to be on around 9:15. And we're going to be interviewing her to find out what would she do, what would she tell you if she were your therapist and you were presenting her with the problem of sexual addiction. In the meantime, I got an interesting email about a week ago, and this was from a man who said to me, "Hey, Carol, I put a filter on my internet to help me protect myself from porn. I have a friend hold the password. I got NetNanny, one of the leading filters. The only problem is it goes on the blink every so often, usually when I'm most vulnerable. Can you recommend a different filter for the Mac? It's mandatory that I have one, and it would be great to have one that worked. P.S. And what about those smartphones? I've resisted getting one because of the temptations, but I know it's only a matter of time before my dumb phone will not even work with the networks." And then he thanks me. Of course, anonymously. Actually, he left me his name, and I'm thinking, which client is this? This email doesn't sound familiar. He didn't say, hey, Carol, I listened to you on the radio and wondered what you could do to help. So I say, hey, who is this? And he says, just a listener. So we'll call him Tom. Tom, I've done some of this investigating. You know, I'm part of two different listservs that probably serves 3,000 people across the world. And I asked them, hey, what are the best filters for Apples, you know, Macintoshes? And here's what they report to me. They actually said that iBoss is a filter that you will not be able to get around. And they said that SafeEyes, which works really well on Macs and iPhones, is also a very reputable filter. Now, the one I recommend the most is Covenant Eyes, which is fantastic for Macs as well as PCs and phones. And then K9 is the freebie. But I got to tell you, addicts are well-meaning, well-intentioned clients. They want to do the right thing. And when they're hurting or they have a real sense of consciousness, well, I got to tell you, they definitely put things on their computer to help them manage pornography. Or chat rooms, or Craigslist, or Facebook. However, a good addict is going to do his or her best to get around this when they're really craving, when they're not working the program, and their cravings have led to deciding, how can I get around my software? And when that happens, you really have to figure out how you can protect yourself with the best. And although I used to recommend for parents of kids, you know, I would say use K9. I still think it's a really good program. But we all know that kids can get around software blockers better than even adults. So I say invest the money. It goes anywhere from $19.99 to about $79.99 per month. And help curb the cravings because you've eliminated one of the vehicles for sexual addiction. And if you're feeling cheap and you're saying, I can't afford that, I would say to you, hey, you can't afford not to. Because clearly, as my clients say, especially one of my favorite clients, he goes, I've got porn in the pocket, which of course means a smartphone. And he had to flip to a flip phone and stop using a smartphone. But I agree with Tom that eventually flip phones won't be available and every phone will be a smartphone, so you better figure out a filter that absolutely works. So, Tom, I hope that helped you, and I appreciate you emailing me. I want to tell anybody who's listening, you can always email me at carolthecoach@aol.com. Or you can go to my website. I actually have two of them. I am a certified sexual addictions therapist of about 34 years. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a certified sexual addictions therapist of 4 years, but I'm a psychotherapist for 34 years. And so I have a website that disseminates very practical, helpful information for you, your wife or husband, your mother, your father. You know, it is just your incredibly diverse and educational website, carolthecoach.com. Because I'm a therapist, and I'm a life coach, and I do television, I do radio, I've got this internet radio show. I'm out there teaching whatever I can. I do workshops on living your best life, actualizing your potential, managing your emotions, you name it, I do it. But my specialty is sex addiction. And so I cannot say enough about my website, Sex Help with Carol the Coach. That is specifically geared for addicts and their partners to get the help that they need. And again, never hesitate to send me an email at carolthecoach@aol.com. And of course, I'll keep it confidential. I'll read it on the air, but I won't share your real name. So you can divulge all sorts of personal information and even know that I may change it. You may say I have two kids. I may say you have three. You know, because I understand that this illness is very shame-based. This disorder makes you feel terrible about yourself, and you worry about your anonymity, and I want you to know that I absolutely respect that. You know, they say sexual addiction is so contagious, is so epidemic, because it is anonymous, affordable, and accessible. And technology is a gift in so many ways. It's a blessing, but it's also a curse because it makes impulse control very difficult. And that's why, as a certified sexual addictions therapist, I really help people to manage the cravings, to utilize the resources available. And I got to tell you, my guests are some of the best, the most qualified in the entire world. So go to iTunes and download Sex Help with Carol the Coach, and you can get all 60-plus shows. And then, you know, if you don't have access to iTunes or you just want to go to blogtalkradio.com and put in Sex Help with Carol the Coach, you could individually download them all and get that started so that you download them to your computer and you can listen to me anytime you want. You know, I got to tell you, I've got listeners all over the world, but a lot of people wait to listen till Wednesday or Friday or the weekend or when they're mowing the lawn. So it matters not when you listen. I just want you to stay informed, learn about the different modalities of treatment out there, and recognize that there is hope. I hope that I bring you a message of hope, strength, and recovery. That's the subtitle of my show. Okay, now I got to tell you a little bit about Connie. I received her book, and I really thought it was incredible. She uses a metaphor of the storm, and that's why she calls it the storm of sex addiction. And she really talks about practical tools for anyone who's caught in the web of sexual addiction. And it's not just for the addict, but it's also for the partner. And you can get her book on Amazon because she really is a believer that you can rescue yourself and you can recover, but you have to utilize the tools available. And Connie's going to be talking about what some of those are. You know, she is really somebody who understands the suffering of addicts and their families. She speaks to addicts and their families, helping professionals and clergy or any other person who's concerned about sexual addiction. Tonight she's going to be talking about the primary causes of this disorder, which are attachment loss in childhood, widespread availability of pornography on the internet, and pivotal events in the lives of addicts that send them over the edge into addiction. She's going to talk about something we talk about often, trauma reenactment, and she's going to explain her five-factor wellness model. She definitely believes in a wellness model to help to combat the epidemic of sexual addiction. So we look forward to talking with her in just a few minutes, and I got to tell you, if you have a question, you can feel free to call. The number is 646-595-3284. Put me in your phone. That's Carol the Coach at 646-595-3284. We encourage and appreciate your questions. So I did a really incredible exercise today with two people. One of the men in my group had experienced real neglect from his father. He loved his father. And his father, I'm sure, loved him. But his father said, I have no time for you, son. I want to drink my martinis. I want to read my paper. I want to watch television. And really neglected him historically. And so my belief was that he held on to this anger that was inside of him. And it was the anger that then caused him to want to medicate by using pornography and women. He had both a sex and a love addiction. And so we did an exercise where he actually wrote a letter to his father, and then he picked one of the group members that reminded him most of his father. And he had what we call Vesuvius. He had a clearing with this man, and we had him do it three times. The first time it was civil, and it was, Dad, how could you do this? But I really understand. The second one was more direct, clearer, and more honest about the feelings that he had inside. And the third one, I had him work on being angry, saying things he wouldn't ever say. And practice just getting that out and externalizing that anger so that he could then move into the forgiveness role and let it go. Because, you know, anger is neither right nor wrong, but if you hold on to it, it can lead to a lot of problems. So I highly encourage somebody to get with a certified sexual addictions therapist if you are feeling that you've got some emotions that need to be regulated and are contributing to your sexual addiction. I can't emphasize enough that that's work that you shouldn't do alone. You should do it with your sponsor. You should do it with a certified sexual addictions therapist. And get the help that you need. White knuckling it and doing it all by yourself is one of the things that got you into this problem to begin with. Now, I'm so happy to introduce Connie Lofgren, who wrote The Storm of Sex Addiction. Connie, are you on the line?
Hi, Carol. Yes, it's me. And how are you this evening?
Well, I'm wonderful. And boy, I've got to tell you, your book is absolutely phenomenal.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Tell me, what made you write this book?
Oh, wow. That, you know, there's always a story behind writing a book. So,
yes, there is.
I have been in private practice for many years. I'm a marriage and family therapist. And in the early days, I worked with adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse and other trauma. And as things evolved, I began to have people showing up in my caseload who had sexual compulsivity problems that I felt were kind of over my head. So I got more training. And about the time I was getting my training, the internet really hit us, and we began to see this kind of explosion in people having problems with internet pornography. And so I realized we have really good information to help people, and I wanted to help get that information out there, first to addicts and their families who are suffering, but also just into the mainstream and increase the conversation about this illness and about the hope of recovery based on our new treatment methods. So I just started putting it together, and I found out that I enjoyed it very much. And actually, the project just kind of carried me along. So it was a joy, actually, to write this. And you know, I feel that it has been helpful to people, getting some good feedback on it. So thank you.
Oh, absolutely. And clearly, it sounds like you progressed in your work, and sexual addiction just kind of occurred because the people that you were working with in combination with the internet had more and more problems that you felt compelled to help. And so
that's right, Carol. And I think many of us in the field, CSATs like yourself, had similar experience. We just began to see more and more people showing up with these problems. And fortunately, the research and the clinical experience was also progressing. So we can now really guide people through a treatment program with predictable success of recovery. And that's the good news that we need to get out there.
Well, absolutely.
And by the way, thank you. Excuse me. But thank you for the. I wanted to say thank you for this work that you're doing to get this information out there and to really encourage people to get to the right treatment and get started on their wellness plan.
Well, thank you so much. You know, I truly believe that obviously the internet, different technology has contributed to the problem, but it's also very much a resource. And so I've got a lot of men and women who are sex addicts that aren't able to get on the internet without the help of their spouse or partner. And this is a staple on Monday night because it's like being in therapy.
Yes, that's so true. And that's right. The internet has an upside. It's a very valuable tool for us. And many of my clients find me on the internet through my website or the book. And that's how they get started in therapy, because sometimes with this illness, as you know, it's very difficult for people to talk about. It's difficult for them to seek resources through their usual channels. So they can find us through the internet. But also the internet just has so many qualities that make it sort of a dangerous place. And I describe those qualities in the book kind of extensively. The tendency to pose, it tends to be impersonalizing. We tend to try things online that we wouldn't in real life. So there are some inherent dangers, and that gets lots of people in trouble because it kind of pulls us in. Into a trance sometimes, and we just get further and further into difficulty.
Well, you know, you said it gets us to pose, or it gets our clients to pose, and I really believe that part of sexual addiction is really about fantasy, and obviously the connections that occur through anonymous sex or through pornography or chat rooms all are highly compiled with fantasy. They're not real life. They're not real intimacy. And so they continue the charade of the excitement of a relationship that really is not real.
Oh, that's true. It's so conducive to fantasy because you really don't know who you're talking to, and they don't really know who you are. And so you can explore this fantasy world that has been created in your mind. You can project all that into what you're doing, whether it's pornography or cruising online or whatever it might be. And, of course, fantasies are perfect. So that all seems very ideal. And when the person is involved in that, it seems very real.
Well, absolutely. So let's get your idea of sexual addiction. You know, so many people say sexual addiction isn't real, and that's when, you know, it may be called hypersexuality or compulsive sexuality. What do you believe that sexual addiction is? What's your definition?
Well, as you know, Carol, when we work with many, many clients, we're getting a portrait, a view into this illness that a lot of people don't. And I know out there in the media, sometimes with these high-profile cases or celebrities who admit to sexual addiction and go to treatment, it just seems pretty remote and in a way kind of shaming to people that have this problem. And what I hear people say is, oh, that's just an excuse for their bad behavior. You know, I'm not sure that's so helpful to have them come out with their sexual addiction, or maybe it is to some people. I think sexual addiction is an illness that's about escape from painful emotions that for some reason the person did not learn to cope with in life. And so this actually becomes a brain disorder. The brain has changed. And it's characterized, this disorder is characterized by, the compulsive sexual behavior over which the person has really lost control. And this is indicated when the person continues, in spite of having had severe consequences, or maybe risking severe consequences, sometimes risking losing everything they value for the euphoria of a fix. And this beginning to escape from reality often started early in life. And the person just simply did not learn constructive coping mechanisms, continued to rely on escaping, and maybe learned new ways of escaping as they go along. So there's really a person who does not learn in early life to feel connected to themselves, connected to others, to respond to emotions constructively, is predisposed to having problems with addiction.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think are the warning signs of sex addiction? In your practice, how would someone know if they or someone they love was addicted to sex?
Well, this is an interesting question, and we can kind of approach it a couple of ways. There are warning signs that those of us in the field are pretty familiar with that are sort of from the addict's point of view. And some of those are that the person is struggling with controlling sexual thoughts and behaviors. They're just preoccupied and can't, a lot of life is taken up with that. Or maybe they're losing, have lost an important relationship, or they're damaging relationships because they can't stop sexual activities outside the relationship. Another sign is they may be lying about time that has been taken with sexual activities. Feeling guilty, especially guilty or shameful after they've acted out, is another sign. Losing time from their work, for example, pursuing their sexual activities. Some of them progress to criminal behaviors, like soliciting prostitutes or sexual harassment or child pornography.
Mm-hmm.
For many people, this is a progressive illness. Or maybe they're blaming other people about their sexual behavior. That's something you and I see a lot. I'm doing this because my partner is cold to me or whatever. Putting yourself at risk for STDs is another warning sign. So those are some of the things that a person who is concerned about themselves might think about. A partner who is concerned might not be seeing those things because the person who's struggling with addiction may be pretty secretive about those struggles. So in my book, I have a chapter that's addressed directly to partners and kind of a different set of warning signs. They're things that she might see as she's dealing with this in her relationship. So I would encourage partners who are wondering maybe to take a look at that chapter. It also addresses in that chapter the levels of severity, five, I call them categories of the storm, so that she might see the level of severity that her partner might be at.
Now, give us an example of what you mean by severity. I know what you mean.
Okay. Well, sometimes, because this is kind of a phrase that is out there, sex addiction, sometimes partners do overreact when they encounter sexual behavior on the part of their mate and jump to conclusions. So we don't want to do that, because there's a very wide range of sexual behavior in human beings, and we're not just talking about having a lot of sex or sexual behavior that might make some of your listeners uncomfortable. So the first category that I talk about is just casual use, and I describe what casual use of pornography, for example, might look like. And then we go to the borderline problem, which is beginning to stir some things up in the relationship. Category three is problematic use. So this is problem behavior that's not quite at the level of addiction, wouldn't meet the full criteria that we use, but is certainly impacting the person's life. And then category four is addiction. And I give a good description of what we're talking about. CSATs, or people trained in this area, use very specific criteria, and you've probably discussed that on the show, Carol. This is not just a loose term for us. We have methods for assessing and helping a person determine whether their problem really rises to the level of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And then what kind of treatment might follow that. And then category five is sex addiction with criminal behavior. So this in this category, people have progressed, and they may be creating really, truly dangerous situations in the home, such as looking at child pornography, which can have some very serious legal consequences. Child molestation is sometimes related to sex addiction,
mm-hmm.
and these more serious behaviors that get into legal trouble.
Absolutely.
So those are the categories. I just try to help a person kind of think through that. A partner can think through that herself and get a better idea if her mate or his mate might need a full assessment.
Well, and clearly, if there's any indication of any of those things, an assessment would be warranted. Because for many partners, mm-hmm. they have, they know the tip of the iceberg. They've stumbled across something.
Mm-hmm.
Someone has called them. Their kids have said, "Dad was looking at this," or "Mommy's
yeah.
always flirting with men." And
mm-hmm.
so both of us would say, if you are somebody who loves somebody that you believe has a problem, if you're getting those warning signs, it's definitely something that the two of you need to explore. And if he or she won't go, you go to get the help.
Oh, yes. I really encourage.
A lot of couples go at different times, don't they?
That's very often the case. A lot of times it's partners who are the first one to be concerned. And they can go talk to a trained therapist and kind of explore their concerns. They don't have to convince their possibly addict partner to go along that first time. It's important, and I address this in the chapter to partners, whether your partner will go for an assessment or not up front, you need to go and begin to focus on your own wellness. Because if you've lived with an addict for a while, or a person who has problematic sexual behavior even, you've begun to sustain some damage from that. People tend to over-accommodate over time and perhaps not even realize how much they are over-accommodating. So I help partners take a look at whether or not their mate may be an addict, but then primarily we talk about focusing on ourselves and what we can do something about. I develop a wellness plan with the partner, just as I do with the addict. And a lot of times, if there has been a shocking revelation
mm-hmm.
or disclosure, the partner is in a kind of trauma that I call betrayal trauma.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of the same features, or I call it the betrayal response, actually. It has a lot of features of trauma. And they may be really needing support and someone to talk to about how they're feeling. Maybe they're not sleeping, having flashbacks to revelations of disclosures of this behavior. So it can be a very rough experience for partners up front because their whole world kind of gets turned upside down.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, so many people say, is this a real psychological disorder? And you and I both know that it absolutely is a real psychological disorder, because so oftentimes the addict has done everything under the sun to stop.
Absolutely.
They're well-intentioned.
Absolutely.
And for whatever reason, that compulsivity, it feels unmanageable to them, and we help them with the tools that it's going to take to become the committee that actually offsets the addict himself. So
I like that word, committee. Yes, and by the time they get to us, excuse me, as you know, a lot of times they have tried many times to control their behavior and have not been able to do that. And they're feeling very badly about this. They're not happy with themselves and are really ready for help. And at that point, we can do the assessment and develop a treatment plan with them. But, you know, most of the addicts I work with are really good-hearted people who want to do right by their family and are basically responsible and have good values. But this illness has taken them to a life that's so outside all of that. And they're often relieved, as you know, Carol, to find out that this is an illness, it's a brain disorder, and that we can help them go through a process in which literally their neural pathways in their brain can heal, and they can just live a life in the present and live out of their values and beliefs that are truly in their heart.
Absolutely. So now let me ask you, because obviously you have spent a large part of your professional life working with sex addicts, and you understand that clearly they can't do it by themselves. And actually, I have to give Patrick Carnes credit for that committee, because he said in one of his workshops as well as on his tapes, he said, no one is stronger than the addict inside of themselves. It's only when they create a committee, which is a certified sexual addictions therapist, a sponsor, a group, the 12-step community, can resources be available that combat and are stronger than the addict. So I want to make sure to give him some credit.
Absolutely. He has contributed so much and was such a pioneer in our field. And my experience, he is absolutely right. I have never, really never, seen an addict recover by himself in isolation. They need to, and when they reach the point, when an addict reaches the point where he or she can say, I can't do this, it's not working, that's a really good sign, because they are ready to accept help and to build into their life the kind of support network through 12-step participation, working with a therapist. In my program, they work in group therapy with other recovering addicts, and some other components to the program. At STARPRO is what I call my program in Omaha. STARPRO stands for Sexual Treatment and Recovery Program. And it's when they begin to have a complete program that it seems the brain really starts to heal, and they get to practice behaviors, new behaviors that helps that happen. For example, we know 12-step participation really strengthens a program. And I call the 12-step, we are blessed in Omaha. There are many 12-step groups for recovering sex addicts, sex and love addicts. And I call it the workout room of recovery. They go practice, essentially, the important skills of a relationship, because you, in 12 steps, you practice listening with an open heart. That's a very good thing to do in a relationship, without giving advice, without being in control, which is a new experience for many addicts. And you practice sharing what you're struggling with and or what you're succeeding at, and finding that other people will be there and encourage you and not shame you. And this is helps addicts reconnect to people. It's not good for us to be disconnected from others. And they find that connecting is safe and can work, and then they start practicing this in other parts of their life. It's very healing. So that's one of the components of the wellness model at StarPro. Hello, Carol. Did I lose you? Are we still plugged in?
Pat, are you back now?
Are we back now?
I think we're back now. Are you there?
I am here, and I'm on a landline, so I don't know what happened there, but we had a little blank spot.
Well, I was going to ask you, okay, so this five-factor wellness model.
Yes.
That is something that you absolutely created, and that is part of the StarPro approach.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
StarPro, yes. Uh-huh. I think that it's very important that we as mental health professionals, as CSATs, are very, very clear with our clients, that we use language they really understand, that helps them really stay focused. And so I developed what I call the five-factor wellness model that incorporates what I think are essential components, and this might be similar to other treatment programs. But there's five of these components. Very early in the treatment process, we go over these in detail and design an individualized plan for each person so that they have this, and I always ask them to keep this in the front of their notebook so they can refer to it frequently because, in my opinion, people are in recovery when they're doing all these components together. And I tell the people I work with, this is not a cafeteria style thing. This is we have to have a complete program for this healing to take place steadily and to move you forward. We know that it takes 6 months to a year for them to really start noticing that they're thinking differently. They're not having so much trouble with cravings. But the components are, did you want me to go over those?
Yes, exactly. I think this is
okay.
Excellent.
Okay. The first component is recovery first, just making that your first priority, that you're going to arrange other activities around recovery activities. You're going to give it your all because you've tried everything else. Now it's time to try this. And the second component is individual therapy. We begin to look at those negative core beliefs that the addict has that keep getting in his or her way. The cognitive distortions, I call them delusional thinking. That's the rationalizing, blaming, minimizing. Those defense mechanisms that all of us use, but addicts do use more extensively, and that keeps them in denial about their illness. Then we look at the stress in their life that drives their acting out, and we begin to look at what might be, in many cases, unconscious underlying issues that have not been resolved, such as early life losses, trauma. Somehow or another, the loss of nurturance in the early life that caused them to begin to numb out and find other ways of coping. Children, if they need to, if things are too painful in early life, children find other ways of coping, and that's adaptive for them, but that sets them up for trouble. Then individual therapy is also group therapy is also part of my program, and we use some of Dr. Karn's materials in the group therapy. Self-care, I go over that in detail as well, because addicts are not usually taking very good care of themselves. They don't love themselves well. And so we go over sleep routine, nutrition, exercise, positive ways of socializing, stress management, boundaries, then 12-step participation is required or strongly encouraged. Sometimes it takes some discussion to help them understand why that's so important. But once they start participating, they begin to see that, and they start to see the benefit, and really, pretty early on, feel some relief about finding out they're not alone, and that there are other good people that are struggling with this illness too. So they need to get a sponsor. They need to work those 12 steps. That really reinforces their recovery work overall, and it reinforces their therapy work. And then I also ask all of my clients to practice daily mindfulness or meditation in some form. And we talk about that so that they can find, I help them decide what kind of mindfulness or meditation they might be using. We know that sex addiction is an illness of escape. Addicts are not in the present. They're either future tripping about something they're going to do in down the road, or maybe they're past tripping about something that is over. So they're kind of missing their life in the present, and we want to be in the present, practice being in the present. So if we practice mindfulness and meditation, we will notice if we're not in the present, and we can come back to the present. And for many
absolutely
of the people we work with, the present is pretty good.
What I tell addicts is that part of creating a happiness factor in their lives is staying in the moment and having gratitude. And when you stay in the moment, you're more likely to have gratitude. And when you're having gratitude, you're more likely to stay in the moment. And so that's imperative to that whole model of how do you now redevelop and recreate a life that is actually going to feel as rewarding as medicating with the addiction. So now let me ask you, because oftentimes people go, am I ever going to get better? Am I ever going to recover from sex addiction?
Mm-hmm.
Have you had clients that asked you, can a person really recover?
Oh, yes, of course, people fear that they're going to be trapped in this forever. Most of them have been struggling a long time, and so they're very discouraged. The joy of our work, Cheryl, of course, is that you and I get to see people who stay the course and really work a wellness plan and begin to talk about how much better they feel and how they feel better about themselves. Just, you know, last week I had a man that I've been working with say, I didn't know life could be so good. He's now in the present most of the time. He's better connected with his children and his partner, and he's just enjoying every day. He's just sort of awed by how good he feels, and we get to see this sort of thing. So,
absolutely.
And
so
that's a pleasure in our work.
Well, and that's one of the things that I think is so helpful about 12-step groups as well as group therapy, because you get to watch many of the veterans in the group that have more recovery or have more gratitude. They get to role model what that looks like and give hope to some of our clients that are newer or have had more trouble and haven't used a recovery model like the one you discussed, which really implements all sorts of tools.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to ask you, because you obviously talk about the dark cave of distorted reality in your
yes
book.
Yes, the riddle.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that chapter starts with the riddle, and you've read the chapter, so you know the answer, that I often ask my clients. Imagine you're in a cave, and there are 50 drooling monsters and 45 howling werewolves. What would you do? And most people say something like, I say, pretend you're in a cave. And they start to think about that, and they say, I'd probably roll up in a ball, or, I'd scream and yell at them or something like that. And so then I say, well, how about a better answer might be quit pretending? And they laugh and say, and they get it. This is a riddle that illustrates how quickly we put ourselves in a paradigm. And we all do this. We put ourselves in a paradigm of our beliefs and values and our perspective and what we learned growing up. And we tend to feel like that's the absolute truth, our perspective. And addicts put themselves in a dark cave with their negative core beliefs about themselves that they've developed over time, which is, I'm not good enough. You know, if people knew me, they wouldn't like me, so I have to keep people away. Sex is my most important need is one of their core beliefs. And I have to be in control of it. There's a negative core beliefs, and then they have these cognitive distortions. Blaming, minimizing, rationalizing, intellectualizing that help keep them in that dark cave. And life being what it is, we're all going to have stress pouring in on us too. So what do you want to do if you think, I'm not good enough and I'm feeling really stressed out and I don't have tools to cope with that? You want to escape. So we have to work at that level. It's not sufficient to just stop the addiction, stop acting out. We have to work at the level of second-order change, as Stephen Covey called it, to transform those negative core beliefs and those cognitive distortions into more adaptive ways of thinking. Because after all, those negative core beliefs aren't even true. They're irrational thoughts.
It's amazing when you're working with an addict and you either have a spouse there, a child there, maybe another group member.
Mm-hmm.
They have tried so diligently to do everything on their own, and they have these core beliefs that originated typically from childhood.
Yes.
And you would think, as ingrained as they are, they wouldn't necessarily change. But just having the awareness of another person in that office with them saying, oh my goodness, you know, I know you feel flawed, but I think you're strong and I think you're courageous and, you know, you're persistent and you're disciplined. When that stuff occurs, it really is healing. And it's part of that process.
Absolutely. Many of them have never had anybody help them step back and look at those core beliefs. In fact, they don't even know they have them sometimes. But they are talking to themselves and feeling in ways and that are living out those core beliefs. They can begin to notice that, and they can begin to notice their cognitive distortions and begin to shift their thinking and begin to treat themselves more lovingly and do things that help them develop new beliefs about themselves, new ways of coping. Most of our addicts, people who struggle with addiction, as you know, Carol, really, the stories in their lives about these negative core beliefs go usually way back, and they have no idea that those feelings and those beliefs about themselves are going way back in their lives. But when we start to explore that, it makes a lot of sense to them.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
And, you know, for our listeners, I'm talking right now to Connie Lofgren, and she has written The Storm of Sex Addiction, and that is Rescue and Recovery. This book is amazing for the layperson, for anybody out there that thinks they may have a problem. And, Connie, I've got to tell you, I know you have a SOCH background, as well as your you're a certified social worker, marriage and family therapist, and I really believe you were a teacher in another life because this is like the most readable textbook for anybody who doesn't grasp concepts. I mean, it just makes it so understandable. That's why I would highly, highly recommend that partners read this book so that they'll better understand the addictive cycle and rationalizations and all the defense mechanisms that go along with this disease, because you do a fabulous job of explaining it.
That was our goal. I mean, we were very consciously, Carol, trying to use plain language, trying to use strong stories and strong illustrations so that we can just get this across to people. And, you know, sometimes we mental health professionals tend to use kind of our jargon. So, yes, my sociology background, I began to see as I wrote this book and primarily addressing addicts and families, but also helping professionals and anyone who might be concerned, I began to feel I really needed to put it in the context of the public health problem that we have. Very widespread epidemic of sexual addiction, and also in the later part of the book, I discuss how we as a society need to address this public health problem. So,
I know, and I wish we had time to talk about children because that's clearly what got me into this field, and it really is embedding the brains of kids all over when they discover their parents' porn or they share with their peers things they've seen on the Internet. I have to tell our listeners that you can take a look at Connie's work by going to www.connielofgreen.com. That's LOFGREEN.com. And where can they get your book, Connie?
Oh, it's on Amazon. So they can order it on Amazon. They can. I know it's at Barnes and Noble as well. So they can easily get it online or at my website. It's available. It's also available in ebook. So if they prefer to download something to read on their Nook or their Kindle, they can do that.
Well, Connie, thank you so much. If people want to get a hold of you, they can contact you at ConnieLofgreen, LOFGREEN, at gmail.com. They can go to your website, www.ConnieLofgreen.com. And I just wish you continued success because I know there are many more books in the future for you. I can feel
well,
it.
Thank you. I haven't quite got to that point yet. But, Carol, I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with your listeners. Hope it's been helpful. And if anybody has any questions, I'd be glad to talk to them.
All right. You have a great week. And, again, I thank you very much.
Thank you, Carol. Good evening.
Good evening. So that is Connie, and she obviously has done a great job of writing this book. I would highly recommend it. She really has made it her mission to educate and to provide that hope, strength, and recovery that when you do what works, it in itself works too. So it's very readable book. It's just actually very insightful. And she's right. The stories are amazing. It pulls you in. It draws you into what people are feeling. And I know that if you're thinking about this subject, you'll really relate to the book too. Okay, well, it's that time. We are going to end for the night. Feel free to email me at carolthecoach@aol.com. And as I end each show with the same statement, I want you to apply this to yourself. You know, there will only be one of you at all times, so I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself and get the help you need because you're worth it. We'll see you next week, same time, same place, at blogtalkradio.com, Sex Help with Carol the Coach. Have a great week.